Thanks for listening to The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac, on demand, brought to you by SEL Mortgage, the leaders in Colorado of special circumstance lending, helping everyone, including people with unusual financing needs. Locally owned and operated, visit myspecialmortgage.com. That's myspecialmortgage.com.
Covering Training Camp 2018, presented by Mountain High Appliance, here's Big Al and D-Mac.
To the Drive, Big Al and D-Mac. My main man, D-Mac, is out. Chad Brown is sitting in with me, my Colorado Buffalo. And with that being said, Kevin Vickerson is in town. Came in for the Bronco alumni and is good enough to sit in with us. Big Vic, how you doing, man?
I'm hanging in good.
Man, I tell you what, this is cool for me because I watch you play for the Denver Broncos, and you played with the kind of effort that I loved, and it was always gritty with you, man. It was never really pretty. It was always ugly and gritty, and you scrapped and you fought for everything, and that was something that I could appreciate.
Just trying to play like I always came up, man. Just playing hard, being from Detroit, man. Just trying to earn it on the field, man. Leave it all on the field. Gritting and grind, man.
So you must be excited when you hear about preseason football, because guys like you, guys like Chad, you know, you guys like to play the game only one way, and that's just play it hard, let me get my snaps in, and then get out of here.
You got to bring your lunch pail, man. That's how I was working, man, just a working mentality, man. So getting this preseason, getting back and getting the dust off, man, so this was a time for me just to get back in the mood of playing ball, getting the dust off, man, coming from a long off season, being in the vacation now, it's time to focus in and just lock in and do your deal.
Let's go back to and I want you to jump on this one as well, Al. We got a couple of Broncos, well, more than a lot of Broncos, who'll be having their first NFL experience tomorrow night.
Yes.
Their very, very first.
Yeah.
Take me back to that night before in the hotel. Take me back to that locker room before the game, that first one.
First, it was in Miami. So it was Hall of Fame game versus the Bears. 05 locker room the day before the game, it was straight nervous. Oh, I was nervous, not knowing what to expect. Mind going, anxiety, just anxious. Didn't get to the game and not play none.
Oh, really? Wow.
No
yeah.
run whatsoever.
Wait a minute, you didn't get in the game at all?
So no game, no run clock, man. No, but it was. That was the part where a lot of guys don't understand when we was deep as a defensive line we had, man, with Kevin Carter, Keith Traylor, Jason Taylor, Vonnie Holiday had just signed with those guys. And I'm a draft pick, so it was like, man, you got to earn your stripes and get in where you fit in. And, you know, that first one, it was that tune-up for those guys. And that's what I had learned, too. So the first – some coaches handled it different. So Saban that year – so he played the starters the first three games, and then the reserves played the last game, all of it.
Wait a minute, the starters played all of the game in game one?
No, so they played like a quarter, and it progressed
as
it went on. So they played it to the point that they got like a third quarter, to the point where they came out of the half for first one or two series, then they done. So now we get the twos, and then the twos get their series, and the threes come in, and it's like, ugh.
You know, I remember as a player and a young player in this league playing in my first pro football game. And my first pro football game was against a guy who was on the cover of Sports Illustrated when I was a junior. He was a senior.
Tony Mandridge.
Oh, Michigan State guy.
Michigan State, yes. And so... I was a camp holdout. I was got to camp late, and my first game was against the Green Bay Packers, and I had 2.5 sacks, and things went well, and I was like, the NFL is going to be really easy. I said the NFL is going to be really easy, and then I realized something, and that something is, first of all, Mandridge had problems playing tackle in the league, and second of all, getting to the quarterback in this business is a lot tougher than I thought it was going to be.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, my first preseason game against Washington Redskins. At that time, the Steelers still had David Little, longtime NFL linebacker. I think he was in year 13. He's now passed, so rest in peace, David Little.
But how did you know David Little?
I played with him. That's what I'm saying. So he was a Steeler linebacker, and me and LaVon Kirkland were coming up. They didn't want to put us two young guys in the game together.
Got you.
So the starters go out, get their first two series. They leave David Little in, and LaVon and I are switching off. LaVon gets one series. I get the next series. So I get into the game. It's a TV timeout, and I'm in a huddle. And for some reason, I choose to say to David Little at this very moment, do you know your rookie year, I was in the third grade?
Wrong time.
Man, he slapped me so hard on the side of my helmet. Shut up, rookie, line up.
Get out of here, man.
I don't know why that came to me. I don't know what I was doing math in my head on the field. But I was like, gosh, he's in year 13. 13 years ago, I was in the fourth grade. That's crazy. That's what I chose to say. So that's the most memorable moment from my first preseason game, saying something incredibly stupid to the vet who's on the field to help me play.
Wow, man. I just remember all of the moments that I got a chance to play in the NFL. Of course, like you guys, I had favorite players.
Man.
You know, my favorite players were guys I really started paying attention to when I was in college. Yeah. And so when I finally got to the NFL and I would see these guys, you know, I almost looked at them like ornamental features on the tree. You know, like, I don't want to hurt them. You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's how I felt my rookie year.
Yeah, I mean, I got Barry Sanders here. Yeah, you know, I know he's my friend and everything, but I don't want to put a hit on him that's going to, you know, hurt him.
We way different. I'm trying to bring the pain to Barry.
Wait. Who was your favorite player, Chad? Chad, who was your favorite player that you had a chance to play against and you said, you know what, I want to take him out?
Joe Montana.
What?
I want to bring Joe Montana down. You kidding me?
You wanted to put pain on Joe Montana?
We played the Chiefs in the playoffs my rookie year, and my goal was to hit Joe Montana so hard he would not get up. That was my goal going into the game.
You were willing to do that to your childhood idol?
Hey, it's football, baby. Line it up. Buckle it up. Let's go.
So I guess with your introduction with Hall of Famers, you talked about that earlier in the show, that your first introduction to the NFL was the Steelers rolling in with Hall of Famers. I guess that would have been my starstruck moment for me, having Mean Joe Green walking through that door and saying, this is what it is to be a Steeler.
Yeah, so the other players we saw, I saw great players all the time in the Steelers facility. I saw Hall of Famers all the time in the Steelers facility. So Joe Montana was just, you know, just another dude. I'm just going
to
play.
But not to you when you're growing up. I mean, Vic, you had to have somebody similar to that.
Yeah, I mean, my guy was actually Jason Taylor. And then me getting drafted by the Dolphins and me being in the locker room with JT and then the no type of guy, it was like, oh, man, I was a kid in this candy store, man. So it was all these guys. I mean, like I said, even Kevin Carter, he was another guy.
Of course.
And Robert Porche was the other one. So
wow.
It was like,
Porche, yeah, from the Detroit Lions. Yeah, and now he's playing for the Dolphins. You got to be looking around like, what is going on here?
Yeah, so I was a sponge, man. So I end up giving my knee to my ACL my rookie year. So that year, I just treated it like a fly on the wall, man. And I was just soaking up all kind of knowledge.
Let me ask you this.
Them guys, man.
When I start talking about our offensive line here for the Denver Broncos, I'm always talking about push. I'm always talking about maintaining leverage. And I'm always talking about finishing plays. If you see an offensive guard who is easily bull rushed, what are you going to do?
He can't anchor. So now I'm finna shake bull. I'm finna do any kind of thing to get him off his spot and give me some power behind my rush.
Chad, if you saw that as a pass rusher, a guy who has a problem anchoring, what are you doing? I mean, there's so many creative things you can do as a pass rusher, but in the obvious pass situation, the guy that you're going against has problems with bull rush. What are you doing?
I'm gonna get him to commit to anchor because if you got problems bullying you, I'm gonna bull you for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna continue to threaten you with this. Then I'm gonna get you to commit to hunker down to deal with the bull rush, and that's when the spin comes. That's when the quick swing comes. The fake bull, chop, chop, and go. So if you've got a weak point in your game, I'm going to use that to set up the things that I want to do. Because as a 240-pound guy, I couldn't bull through everybody.
Right.
But I could threaten you with my bull, get you to commit to stop it, and then that's when I get to play the game that suited me better and go with my speed.
I love talking about defensive line play because the defensive line and the offensive line are the lifebloods of the team. But, Vic, you had to deal with something that we didn't have to deal with while I was playing. You had to deal with the new change in the defensive line rules. And for we're going to get real technical here, so just follow me here, fellas, for a while, okay? Mm-hmm. The double team block, when you are in a three technique, which means outside shade of the guard, you couldn't grab anymore by the time you were playing. But when I was playing, when Chad was playing, that was a big part of that.
No.
And these are the reasons why you're starting to see these running backs get these big chunks of yards because you cannot hold off that lead guard.
Yeah. But see, the game has changed to the point where a lot of stuff was going inside zone. So that's where it's kind of leading now. But when we was playing, like you said, those rule changes, we had to be innovative in the way we was playing and attacking the defensive line, too. So we start half charging. So really, once we start watching film and you see that the guard is only posting you for the tackle to move you to get your hip to go from here to there. So once we seen that, and I'm like, Coach, this guy ain't even really paying attention to me. It's just it's the tackle that's doing the pushing. So once we seen that, we seen the heavy look when they get in that heavy stance. I mean, and it's really about your read. If you get the right read and you can half charge it, that tackle is not expecting you to hit him inside half because he's aiming straight at your hip. So once that goes away, once you take your hip away and I'm hitting him in his mouth now, his guard, his post is gone.
Man, I tell you what.
You know what I mean? So this is different ways.
It's different ways of playing it, but you were part of a team that had a chance to win a Super Bowl while you were here, and you got to tell me about that run. And what I know you were injured during that season, but you got to tell me what that was like to be on that team, to have that resurgence. First of all, give me what it was like to be in that locker room after that Baltimore Ravens game. Okay. I didn't mean to get personal, but I want to know what it was like to be in that locker room after that Ravens game and then make it all the way to the Super Bowl the next year and be disappointed about not getting a ring that time.
That was a hard feeling, man, because knowing that we had Pittsburgh at our place that following week after Baltimore, we handled Pittsburgh pretty good, I think, too, that season. I think we would have – we should have been on a three-peat, to be truthfully honest.
I was a team with – Raheem Moore after that. Was there any blame really assigned? Because, you know, a lot of us...
Guys feel certain ways, but, no one showed it. I called Raheem and actually tried to pick him up afterward. I know he was going through it. That Baltimore was a tough loss. I mean, because we had him beat. I mean, it was come down to a last-second play like that. That's heartbreaking, man. But we didn't. We was together. And then that was the thing is... You being on teams, and I was in Tennessee and a couple of times when we did have a good run of those years, we weren't together. Up and down a year, not really leading the league in sacks. When we took off, we had more of a brotherhood mentality. And then that's the same thing we had when here. When our defense came together, I mean, we would have team dinners. We would have team events. We would go out to support team each other's events and doing stuff as a family, more family-oriented. But that's when we was leaning on each other, and it would play over on the field too because you got my back and I got yours, and that was how we really played on defense, man. And it was good.
It was good. And then after that, you went through an incredible offseason, where nobody saw the end of the season ending like it did, and to make that run to the Super Bowl and for that game to not end the way that the team wanted.
Yeah.
What was that feeling like in that locker room after that event? After losing to the Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl?
That wasn't us. That was probably the worst game we put together all year as a unit that year. And that wasn't us. And that's what all I can say is, and then the guys that we had playing, we was missing seven starters.
Right. You were out. Chris Harris was out. Von Miller was out.
Ryan Clady, Derek Wolf, Raheem Moore was out. So we had some key pieces, but Coach Fox had the next man up mentality. So that was pretty, that was the mentality we had all season. I went out week 10. Fine, we went out a couple weeks after that. Chris Harris went out the first round of the playoffs. Wolfie went out a little bit before that. So it was like we kept getting shot. I mean, man down, man
right,
down. So
right.
We have to replace.
You don't even know what team that is out there after.
You know what I mean? Because you got so many
down.
Free agents coming in, the new pieces, new guys coming in. So it was, they got to catch up to speed of how we worked.
Right.
You know, that was another thing to get guys and bring them along. And then, you know, coming from other places, guys don't really want to buy in all, right away. You know what I mean?
It's why?
Like, you know, stuff might not be going their way. That's another. But guys, it's an egotistic league. You know what I mean? And guys got egos, and guys, you know,
they want what they want.
Exactly.
Yeah. Chad, yeah. I mean, you were part of several great teams part in your career, and I know you just seem to miss the championship moment as a player. And you talk about that moment to me in the past about being on the Patriot team that had the incredible run. That was that the undefeated year?
Yes.
What was the mentality like? I mean, you've been part of, like I said, you've been a leader. You're a 15-year veteran in the NFL, and you know many people are you know, should I say, a host of people are always trying to find out what's the secret sauce. How do you get into the right winning mood, and how do you build that camaraderie when you're trying to get to a place where it's very rare air? How do you do that from all of those days? What is the key characteristic that you have to have when you're building a championship style team, in your opinion?
You need a few great players. You don't need to all be great players, but you need a few great players. And then you need everybody to buy in, mm-hmm. and have a genuine love for the game. And some of those great players need to be that rising tide that lifts all the boats. So whether it's Peyton Manning or Tom Brady or Rod Woodson on some of the teams that I was on, you need that guy who inspires everyone else to play better. And I can't think of a championship team or a near championship team that I was on that didn't have some great players.
Mm-hmm.
The entire squad played with passion and was mm-hmm. and loved football. Mm-hmm. And then some of those great players were incredible leaders. Going back to the University of Colorado, we don't go where we went without Eric Bieniemy.
Right.
Eric Bieniemy was a great player on the field, but his greatness was multiplied by his attitude and his leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. I would imagine being in the same locker room as Peyton Manning. Those same kind mm-hmm. of things, those great players are the ones mm-hmm. who you need to drive that thing forward. When I was a Seattle Seahawk and Mike Holmgren said, we don't have any great leaders, part of me took it as a personal affront to me. But then looking back at teams that have truly great leaders, nah, I wasn't that guy. That was not my personality. I was not built that way. That's not the kind of guy I was. So to look back and say, yeah, Reggie White, that was a huge part of why Green Bay won the Super Bowl when
right,
Mike Holmgren was there.
Because
leadership.
Yeah.
You know, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, those guys, they bring that extra.
When you see this team, and you certainly played with a great player in with Von Miller. He was coming on and became a superstar in this league. Does Von strike you as a great leader, Vic? Or is he just a great player who's just having great fun?
When Von was younger, Von was leading by example, by his play on the field as far as that way. Since Von has gotten older and mature, Von can now be more vocal and be more of a leader in the building. More, you know what I'm saying? As
yeah,
far
of course.
As his actions off the field and on the field. Because beforehand, you know, issues happened and we all learned from it. And that was mistakes, growing pains. But now we see him mature and evolve into the player becoming, but now you see more guys with a bigger influence on that he has influence on with Shane Ray and Shaq Barrett and the guys that's looking at his play and trying to step up and try to hold that end up to him.
You know, there was one guy that you played with. There was one guy that you played with that I would have loved to have played with, and it's Champ Bailey.
I love Champ, man.
You know, I think Champ is going to be up for the Hall of Fame.
He's the first ballot.
First ballot.
He's the first ballot, man.
You know, I hope that's true. I hope that's true. I mean, Champ has...
He made 12 straight Pro Bowls. 12
straight Pro Bowls. I don't know how they value Pro Bowls anymore in the NFL because so many guys say no to them, and you end up getting guys like Trevor Siemian playing mm-hmm. in the Pro Bowl. I mean, what kind of value is the Pro Bowl when the guy who is playing is the mm-hmm. sixth alternate?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think Pro Bowl votes count in the overall scheme yeah. of things, but... Mm-hmm. how it's viewed now is totally different than the way it was viewed
before.
You know, 15 years ago when actually people actually went and played in the Pro Bowl.
True.
But I think Champ's going to go in. What was Champ like as a, you know, because we talked earlier about Demaryius Thomas and who he was as a player. Mm-hmm. And certainly he's not a rah-rah guy. Mm-hmm. And I don't look at Champ as a rah-rah guy, but a
definitely,
great player. But
not.
How would you describe Champ's ability to inspire as a great corner on the team?
Champ did it with actions.
Didn't say much?
Never said much. But when he spoke, it moves you, and it was coming from the heart, and you knew it was real. And it was time, and it was meaningful. It was something that was important for Champ to step up and start to say something. He wouldn't say much, but he would be there on time. He would be where he was supposed to be at on the field. He was accountable. And that part of knowing what your assignment, and then you can help the young guys too. And they come to you when you can come in. They can ask you something, and you can, yeah, this is what it is. And it's the same thing with we had a guy like that really in every position that can come back to young guys come in. Oh, what we got to do right here, coach, or we ain't got to go, Coach Vic, or T Knight, or DeMarcus Ware. You got Wesley Woodyard. Who else? DJ Williams in the room. But Champ, it was Champ. It was Bernardo Hill at one point. The free safeties was the DBs. We had extra knowledge outside of the coaches and within the scheme of things that can translate it and make it understandable for these players to play fast. And that was the biggest thing, that once we got everybody on that same page, we used to have film study just amongst the defense, unit meeting, just the D-line, just the DB.
After work.
This was something that this is how we see the game, and this is how we get on the same page. And once we get our call and hearing it coming from Woodyard, because he was a signal caller then, so hearing him call the plays and him and Danny Trevathan, those guys led by play and example on the field. Woodyard was an excellent captain, but he was more verbal and more action, you know what I mean, too. So
love that. And Chad, you know, of course, this leads us to an incredible run up to the game. And Vic, man, I got to tell you, man, it was my pleasure covering you, watching you as a player. You know, it's good to have you in studio back around town. I love having the guys around to stop in the studio, and mm-hmm. I appreciate you. And Chad, we're going to have to break this thing down old school style. I don't know if it's quite time for a fire up. We're not going to do a fire up. But we got to have a little football music and get this thing going to tell
us. It's time for football.
It's
football
tell us
season.
About
it's back, man.
Yeah,
it's back.
The big plays that are about to happen tomorrow night at Sports Authority Field.
No. 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 No.
At Mile High Stadium. Is it this Mile High?
Bronco Stadium.
Bronco Stadium at Mile High.
There we go.
All right, we'll be back with players to watch tomorrow night for the game.
Sandy Clef here to tell you about SCL Mortgage Special Circumstance Lending, locally owned and operated. And if you're self-employed or work on commission, this is the place for you. Bank statement loans are back. You don't need tax returns to do your loan. In some cases, the bank statement loans can be done with credit scores in the low 600s. MySpecialMortgage.com on the web. 303-790-2222, the phone number. SCL Mortgage, licensed by the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies, number 1200716.
Covering Training Camp 2018, presented by Body Armor Sports Drink. Here's Big Al and D-Mac.
Big time football is right around the corner. The Woo! Opening day for the season is right around the corner, September 9th against the Seattle Seahawks at Sports Authority Field at Mile High. But to start it off, Chad, we got a little preseason football. I'm looking for this running back position to lead the way. Is there anybody out there that you can look at and seriously say, this guy is going to give us the juice that we need?
Man, I think it's going to be an end running back by committee. I'm just looking forward to seeing these guys, what they can do, and if this offensive line is actually improved over what we've had the last couple seasons. Royce Freeman excites me. I'm looking forward to seeing Phil Lindsay in the third and fourth quarter get some run on special teams in the backfield. He's been special during camp, coming out of the backfield as a pass receiver.
I am looking forward to one guy having the major moment of the night, and I think I'm right. My new running back for the Denver Broncos that I cannot wait to see is D'Angelo Henderson. There's something about the way that he plays the game that is different. He has that little extra step. He has that bounce to him. Chad, it feels like we are looking at a real big-time make-a-miss running back. 5'9", 210 pounds. Tell me why not? Why not D'Angelo Henderson?
I can't tell you why not. I can just tell you that there's competition in this room, and all these guys deserve to get some run and see what they've actually got. You talked about this guy yesterday. Talk about David Williams. He's another guy who we don't know a whole lot about. We're looking forward to seeing.
I am loving this new running back job for the Denver Broncos. It feels like we have more excitement here than we've had in a long time. New running backs coach, new running backs, new system, new quarterback. Look for our running back group to be the strength of this team. But certainly there is one position in particular that's going to give us the most excitement this year, and I think it's going to be from the wide receivers. And look for those guys to put up big numbers this year. Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, and Courtland Sutton has been a star all preseason long, Chad Brown.
Ain't no doubt about it. But then you can't forget DeSean Jackson, River Craycraft. So there's a bunch of guys who have a chance to make this team in that fourth, fifth, and sixth spot, who I think will be able to go out and make plays this season for the Broncos. It's been a good camp for the receiver group overall, but I've been impressed with these young guys too.
We're always talking about the young guys, but don't forget about the guys that have made plays around here for many years. Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders.
It's third and goal from the five. Three down look, a little different. Thomas.
Sanders in motion. Takes the handoff. Back to pass. Going to Sanders. Complete. Well, it's not a touchdown, but it's a big 2 points for the Broncos as that cuts the Miami lead to three.
So many good plays that these guys are responsible for. And for the fan base who hasn't had a chance to make it out to practice, when you finally see the big fella, Courtland Sutton, you're going to love the way that he moves, and you're going to love the way that he competes for the football. He's different. But this team has always been anchored around a great defense. And when I say a great defense, I mean the front seven for the Denver Broncos look to be the most exciting group of this team. I'm telling you, the receivers look fantastic. The running backs look good. The offensive line is solid. Our quarterback, of course, is a go-to guy. But our defensive line is looking so, so good. Shelby Harris is going to have a fantastic year. And, of course, when you look at Derek Wolfe, he has been the rock that this team has needed for many years to come. But when it starts, and you know it's going to start outside with Von Miller getting it done.
Melvin Gordon to his left, Rivers to throw. Has time. Looking. Now chased, now sacked. That's a coverage sack, and that's Von Miller, who's got at least one sack in five straight games now. That is six on the year, and he now has 14 sacks in 14 games against the Chargers in his career. And with that sack, he moves past Carl Mecklenburg for the second most in Broncos history.
It's been fun watching Von Miller all preseason long. He has been unstoppable. We don't have a tackle to stop him in pass rush. We don't have a tackle to stop him in obvious pass situations. But don't worry. No one in the NFL has a guy like Von Miller. But, Chad, we also have a young stud in Bradley Chubb who's looking to make his first start for the Denver Broncos.
Special kid can bend the corner like unlike a man his size is supposed to do. Can set the edge against the run. That's why he's been promoted to that first team job. But if you're going to talk about Vaughn and Bradley, then you got to talk about Shane Ray and Shaq Barrett, the super sub Shaq Barrett coming in. Shane Ray, pass rush specialist. We'll see what he does coming off the wrist injury. I expect him to be effective in the pass rush game. And then we've seen Shaq do it in the run game and do it getting after quarterback. Maybe the most complete outside linebacker room in the league.
front seven for the Denver Broncos is outstanding. The defensive line, the linebackers, look for instant pressure. And when instant pressure happens, you know one thing is always available, the interception. And there's an interception for everybody in this secondary. Chris Harris is looking fantastic. And, of course, Simmons is looking great at safety. And Stewart is looking solid. Bradley Roby is coming along. We got to find help at that third cornerback position. But I'm telling you, with the pressure from that front four and, of course, those linebackers, we're looking for new packages for the Denver Broncos. Not just the two-man that you are used to seeing. Look for blitz packages coming down the line for this talented defensive front and that secondary holding up. This is going to be an incredible year for the Denver Broncos because of the excitement that's been created from our front seven on the defensive side. And, of course, Joe Woods coming into his second season as a defensive coordinator. He has a few tricks up his sleeve also, Chad.
Joe Woods is going to expand the package this year. Had to keep it a little simpler last year, breaking in new players like Justin Simmons at that free safety spot. Justin Simmons, second year, far more advanced in his knowledge of the game, allows Joe Woods more comfort in dialing up blitzes, taking advantage of those outside linebackers, taking advantage of Derek Wolfe in pass rush games. Joe Woods, second year, I think we'll see a marked improvement from a defense, what we saw from last year.
Oh, there's one thing that I love more than even a great quarterback sack. That's an interception.
Carr's back up on third and five. Carr looking right, throwing middle. Intercepted by Chris Harris Jr. It's going back the other way for a Denver touchdown. What did he do? He threw the ball directly into the middle of the field. And Derek Carr took the snap and threw the ball over the middle right to Chris Harris Jr., who runs it back 69 yards for a touchdown.
What's always exciting about this team is to watch great players play great in the biggest moments. I know this is just a preseason game, but when you have anchors on your team at linebacker in Brandon Marshall, at linebacker with Von Miller, and the defensive line, Derek Wolfe, and Chris Harris over there on the defensive side, it leads to wins. And when you look at the offensive side, Ron Leary is the truth. Ron Leary is the truth. Look for him to open up holes for those running backs. And let's be really, really creative with this offensive team because Case Keenum has gotten it done all preseason long. I know it will only be 10 or 15 plays for him, but look for this offense to be efficient. Look for them to move the football. Look for things to make more sense to us all the time when we are on the field. And let's secure the football on special teams. And with that being said, I want this Denver Bronco team to be part of a winning preseason because all the teams that have won the Super Bowl over the last 11 years have been at least a preseason winner. And when we come back, we'll wrap this up and get our Rockies fired up for a great weekend with the Los Angeles Dodgers. We need to get those wins going as well.
Covering training camp 2018, presented by Mountain High Appliance. Here's Big Al and D-Mac.
Yeah.
Let's go, Colorado Rockies, man. This is so, so frustrating. But John Gray's on the bump tonight. We got to get us a win, man. It's Friday night, and Big Tech just got paid. You got to be kidding me.
You're right, it is payday, my friend.
Little Johnny Kemp to send us on a Friday night.
Friday
oh, my
night.
Goodness. Saturday it'll be Kyle Freeland on the bump, and then we're gonna close up this party with Chad Bettis on Sunday.
Critical series, man, for the Rockies.
Critical, man. Critical goodness. It feels like things just fall apart quickly around here in the seventh inning. Of course, we've been talking about it and what was the stat that Drew gave last night, Big Sexy, that was such an amazing stat? It was so good, I'm going to let you say it again because
Drew Goodman actually said it in the broadcast, and I don't know if it was going into last night or if that includes what happened last night, but the Rockies have been outscored by 71 or 72 runs here at the seventh inning or later in these games.
Yeah, it's been an issue. We gave up five home runs with our relievers.
70. 70 runs. They've been outscored 70 runs, Alfred.
70 runs the final in the seventh inning or later.
Seventh inning, eighth inning, ninth inning.
Wow. Wow.
Five home runs hit last night.
Five
by
them.
The Dodgers in the seventh inning or later last night.
That was a bizarre game, man. What a bizarre game. But tonight, you know, we'll have to try to pull it together. And I think we just got to go into these seventh innings with a four-run lead. A two-run lead is not comfortable anymore around here. And, you know, no matter what we do, it just feels like it's a troubled time for us when we get to the seventh inning. Do you stretch the starters out longer? I mean, you're going to get criticized for that. You pay all these relievers to come in to do what they're supposed to do, and then Wade Davis gave up a couple bombs last night. I'm like, wow, this is not the way that you draw this up. Crazy ending to that game last night. But the Rocks are back at it tonight at 7 o'clock. Is it 6:40 start time? 6:40 start time, so enjoy that. I know I will. My sons are all at home for the first time in a long time, and I think we're going to make it to the Colorado Rockies game as a group this weekend, either Saturday night or Sunday day game. But I think it's probably going to be Saturday night because I have three of the four that are all over 21.
You're not going to the Broncos game on Saturday night?
I think we're gonna miss the Broncos game this time because I can watch that on Sunday morning. I just never get a chance to get all four of them together, Chad.
You know what I'm saying? I know it is. Yeah, it's tough when the kids get older, trying to bring them all together.
Right. I mean, it's a baseball contest. But you know what's great is that I'm quite sure we'll find our way to one of these areas around the stadium that'll have the game on.
Right.
You know, so you can watch the Broncos game at the Rockies game. This is such a huge series for the Rockies, man. We had seven games at home coming in here, and to see where we are now, I couldn't imagine us being in such a fickle position when it comes to us dealing with late inning success by the other team. And right now, in the standings, as it sits right now, we are 3.5 games behind in the divisional race to the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers, who are tied. Come on. I mean, you got them right here, right now. Take care of your business. A head-to-head matchup with these guys at this stage in the game. I mean, this is it, man. I mean, this is 115 games in. This is it. I mean, our whole baseball season is coming down to this. I want to see this team do something it has never done. It's win a division title. Never in the history of the Colorado Rockies have they won a division title. I don't want to get in the wild card. I don't want that. It just doesn't feel right. It's like when you have the goods, play with the goods, play with the confidence. And I don't know how you shake up this sad affair of pitching woes in the seventh, eighth, and now Wade Davis struggling in the ninth. I mean, Ottavino was, look, man, let's just get it. Let's get it together. Let's get it together. We have three games against a team who has a 3.5 game lead against you head to head. It doesn't get any better than this. Come on. This is our time. This is our time, Rockies.
Well, they got to fix these bullpen woes. You know, Wade Davis, last 26 appearances, 7.5 ERA. Brian Shaw, last 24 appearances, 8.8 ERA. Jack McGee, last 18 appearances, 10.29 ERA. So it's right there in front of you, but you can't seize it if the bullpen is, you know, they're all 7+ in ERA, man.
Last 10 games for the Rockies, 3-7. That's not who we are. That's not who we want to be. And of course, you know, when you look at who we are at home, this is probably the most frustrating portion of this because we're usually a better home team than we are a road team. But this year we are 28-27 at home. That's unusual for a good Colorado Rockies team because we are 32-28 on the road. We have a better road record than we do home record for such a great crowd and fan base that shows up for the Colorado Rockies all the time. This feels unusual. One day you win, one day you lose. That's what the record says, but we need this to come together right now to make sure that we are where we want to be in 2 weeks and in 3 weeks when it really counts when we are starting to say, hey, we're looking up at the scoreboard and you're sitting in the stadium trying to figure out what the Diamondbacks are doing, or you're trying to figure out what the Dodgers are doing. Take care of your business right now so you don't have to worry about that. Big game tomorrow for the rookies that'll be taking place at Sports Authority Field at Mile High.
Broncos.
I said it wrong again. Let me do it. At Sports Authority at Mile High.
Nope, Broncos Stadium.
Broncos Stadium at Mile High.
See, look at all these rundowns. Look at this. That's why I said it wrong. See, all these are laminated.
That means I didn't give it to you.
They're laminated, and they have them clearly marked Sports Authority at Mile High, and I know it's Broncos Stadium at Mile High.
Where do the Chargers play?
They play in Los Angeles.
There we go.
Oh, you thought I was going to mess that up.
Yeah.
You thought I was going to say San Diego.
I've been saying,
I know, when you play against the Chargers in your division for all those years and you think about them, you think about the San Diego Chargers, but now Los Angeles. Broncos Stadium at Mile High. Don't forget, guys, tomorrow is the first game ever in Denver Bronco history where there will be no paper tickets. They will all be electronic tickets, which means that you have to charge your phone. Take a picture of that ticket on your phone so that you will have it, and make sure that it's, that phone is charged so that there are no issues. It's going to be different because we've never done this before, and if you're going to the game with somebody who's not used to that kind of technology, take the picture for them, keep it on your phone, or take it on their phone, or keep whatever way you do it, help the people out who need the help. And for my partner, D-Mac, who was out the last couple of days, I hope he is really enjoying his family. And congratulations to Mom and Pop, 50 years of marriage. And, boy, I tell you what, that feels good to say to me. Chad, man, I want to say thank you personally for coming in here and rolling with me. It's been great these last couple of days because we can get down into the nitty-gritty of talking football. And I appreciate you, bro.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Always a pleasure.
And for Big Sexy, the man that pulls it together every single day and makes sure that this show's going the right direction.
Teddy Bridgewater, touchdown on his first drive.
Teddy Bridgewater.
4 for 5, 37 yards and a touchdown.
Oh, his trade value just went up.
Teddy Bridgewater. Oh, man. I hate to be the guy to say I told you so. Oh, man. Kyle Berry, please tell me it ain't so.
Look at the game, Teddy.
It's Big Al. I'll see you Monday at 3 on the drive. Go Broncos.